Welcome to Voice of Albion with Paul Hickman on the White Network.
Oh, welcome to Voice of Albion on the White Network. Tonight I'm joined by Jimmy Marr from Oregon. Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Listeners are welcome to call in. The easiest way to do that is to just go into Skype, search for the White Network, and then click call on the white logo. So you are well known for successfully spreading the mantra in and around Oregon, Jimmy. The mantra, we should explain, is a meme devised by Rob Whitaker and is being promoted by White Rabbit Radio. The main benefit is to arm people with a response to the attack of racist, in quotes, which our enemy, our cultural Marxist and Jewish enemies particularly, have used so successfully against white people and only white people for several decades. I first came to know about it a few years back after listening to the fellow, listening to Follow the White Rabbit on YouTube. What about you, Jimmy? When did you first find out about the meme, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, and what was your first impressions?
Same as you, Paul. It was through White Rabbit Radio. I had written an essay that was published on NewsNet 14, John Fife, webmaster, sometime earlier, but early in 2010, I got an email from him. I was working with Pacifica Forum then, and he said, hey, you guys should see, I'd like to see what would happen if you guys could get on a consistent message. And then there was a link to Follow the White Rabbit or whatever Horace's website is. What is it called? White Rabbit Radio.
White Rabbit Radio. But before that, he had the, that like long series. There was about 70 episodes called Follow the White Rabbit on YouTube.
Yeah.
I came across that on that, Facebook group, League of European Americans.
Right.
I think that's where I first got speaking to you.
Yes. Yes.
So you decided to take the bull by the horns and get out into the area, onto the streets, and spread the message. But how did you start out exactly?
Well, I mean, let's just back up a little bit, because I was talking regularly at University of Oregon at the time that I found that out. And I began, and I was on my way out. They were getting me kicked out of there. They were getting me banned. But I had a few times before I was banned where I could get out the mantra. And I did there, and I had it, at least one presentation with, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, and I had that published in the newspaper. I immediately started in the, venue where I was, which was Speaking Weekly at the University of Oregon, but then shortly there, within months after starting on the mantra, I was banned from speaking there.
How did you get that gig, Jimmy, speaking at the university?
Oh, it's kind of long and complicated. Basically, you know, it was a bit of subversion. It was actually a left-wing group, sort of a Palestinian equity type group, you know, that since we're dealing with issues of Palestine, then we began to focus on, distortion in the media. And one thing led to another. And this, it was handled by an elderly professor, what they call, it's actually in layman's terms, a retired professor in academia. They call it Professor Emeritus. And he had, lecturing privileges at the university where he had lecture hall reserved once a week. And so I started out there and then I came up and I was, became his assistant. And as he got older and older, he was living in a nursing home and, I was his personal assistant. And so I basically got a lot of power and, I would take him to the lecture, but I was basically at that point at the end, I was in charge. And that's basically how what they did. They took away his status as Professor Emeritus. They changed the university bylaws regarding use of lecture facilities by Professor Emeritus faculty. And when they did that, then they got rid of me.
So they changed their kind of varsity policy because they didn't like.
Yes, it was a resolution of the faculty senate. They did that.
Did you kind of recruit any of the students, or was they all kind of mostly leftist Marxists?
Well, it was mostly leftist, but I don't rule those people out as prospects. I tend to, you know, I try to speak to them. And I try to recruit, and I can't say I've had a lot of luck, but, you know, this is a long war to reach the hearts and minds, and I'm still trying.
I would agree with you that we shouldn't sort of write off student types and follow that stereotype that they're all Marxists, because they're not. I mean, I do quite a bit with a social nationalist youth group in England called National Action, and they helped us out yesterday on the White Man March, and, yeah, I mean, they're all students, so... I think that's another thing we've been fed, isn't it? That all students are sort of far left Marxist types, when that just can't be the case, can it? That can't be true.
Well, even if it is true, I wouldn't say that a communist, you know, I think Hitler is even quoted as saying that communists make good national socialists. It's, you know, we're not really, the myth is that we're a right-wing extremist group, and we're not. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I mean, I was always on the left coming up,
They're just labels, really, aren't they? We shouldn't really
worry
about that too much.
I think so. But let me get back, Paul, to something that you asked, because you said, what was my impression of the mantra when I first came about it? And it's an important point, because I thought it was a trick. I thought it was slick. I thought, wow, this is a gimmick. This is a gimmick of how to go forward. You know, I didn't realize that it was true. And this awareness has grown on me slowly, you know, from repeating this thing, thinking that it was a gimmick. I mean, I'm a born again true believer in white genocide. It's all very apparent to me. It's an idea that's so simple, and yet it's right. Who was it says, you know, the hardest thing to see is what's right under your nose. And that's the way white genocide is. And so I was just being my normal old contrarian self, repeating this thing because I thought it irritated the right people. And lo and behold, you know, the repetition of it, has turned me into a real true believer.
It's kind of hidden in plain sight.
Yes.
But I think one of the first things you did that got really noticed was your banner drop over that bridge in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was on Labor Day 2013.
So from that, you was invited to be interviewed by KVAL, KVAL, a local news station. I'll put a link to that on the show page here. But how did that go? Did they edit it fairly? I noticed you managed to get the mantra out, just about.
Well, yeah, or at least the punchline for the mantra, the anti-racist is a code word for any white, which is good. And they didn't assassinate me. In fact, they probably, by editing, I gave them a 30-minute interview on that bridge, and they used, I don't know, maybe 1 minute of it. But I liked the part that they liked. They actually kept me on message better than I kept myself on message, because I was going all over the place in the course of 30 minutes. So they narrowed it down for me, and they were actually did me a favor. I don't know that that was their intention, although I did have very friendly feelings for that young woman, Nicole Comstock.
She seemed kind of fair there.
Yeah, that's a good word.
You had these kind of antis do like an anti-protest on the same bridge.
Oh, yeah.
With a red dash going through it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they spelled all with one L, the word all as A-L.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, just them doing that, being they made the effort to do that, must show that your original effort was kind of successful, right?
Yeah, you just reminded me of something. In coming back from Olympia yesterday afternoon, see, these anti-whites were on the lookout. They were on the prowl for us in Portland. We were coming through town and on one of the overpasses over I-5 in Portland. What did that sign say, Judy? Are you, no Nazis in Rose City. They had their banner up. We weren't even in town, but they had a banner out there. No Nazis in Rose City.
So it's got to be having an effect, isn't it? If the,
yeah. With those anti-whites, they're really showing their colors. Yeah.
Well, I was happy to see that activism you did on that bridge in the Daily Mail newspaper in England. Now, I'll just explain a little bit more, probably for the American listeners. The Daily Mail is a kind of highbrow tabloid, I guess is the best way to describe it. You've got your usual tabloids with, about reality TV shows and celebrities kind of being drunk. Well, it's a bit more highbrow than that, but it is a tabloid. But the thing is, it was reported in there, and it was reported in 2012 that the Daily Mail has overtaken the New York Times to become the world's most visited newspaper website. And that's according to the tracking service Comscore. Also, PressGazette.co.uk reported on the 6th of December 2013 that the Daily Mail has overtaken The Sun as Britain's most popular newspaper on a Saturday. In the daily paper market, it showed a year-on-year increase of 4%. This is the Daily Mail using. Meanwhile, The Independent has had a 15% drop. So you've got most of these newspapers are dying, including the New York Times, I understand it, that vehemently Jewish supremacist New York Times. But the Daily Mail is one of the few papers which is bucking the trend. And I think that is mainly because they do report black and white crime. They do report things like the activity you was in. And I would argue that that's why they're doing well. So you got on the right paper there. Did the Daily Mail contact you at all?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, it's great free publicity anyway, and it shows how far a little bit of activism can go. I mean, what did it take you 2 or 3 hours to do that?
Oh, yeah, we were up there for an hour and 45 minutes, but, you know, that was a 40-foot banner, and it takes me a long time to make those. So, there's weeks of effort usually that go into that, particularly if I'm making a banner like that inside and I can only work on a 6-foot table. You know, I have to paint and let it dry and then scroll and then paint and let it dry and scroll. It's time consuming. But I enjoy it.
Yeah. And I mean, for the cost, so that would have been a very nominal cost. You got kind of worldwide publicity.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was, very quickly up to, 800,000 views. So we were amazed. And when I say we, let me go ahead and say that particular location, with that particular message at that particular time was not my idea. It was, a young protege wanted to do that. And I went along with that idea.
Yeah,
even though I had a different idea, and it was a phenomenal success, and it's all thanks to him.
As I understand, you've got like a small group that help you out, because you can't really do much on your own. You do need a kind of little group, so
yeah.
Even if they remain nameless, I'm sure you appreciate their help.
Oh yeah, I really
and
do.
The good wife there is quite supportive, and she helps out as well, right?
Yeah, an unbelievable amount. Well, what she's developed into is a good photographer. We really learned the value, you know, Paul, because we did these things. Because she didn't in the early days come out with me, but I would just go out with the bagpipes and a sign by myself. And I was doing that for well over a year, before. I actually invited her to, or requested that she come along and take photographs. That may have been the first time, in fact, that I asked her if she could come and park on the side and take a photograph. But then once I saw that, you know, the second wave of publicity based on the photograph is more than the people I was actually reaching with the activity directly, then I began to see the importance of photographing and making video, and she's taken over that role, and she's doing a good job.
Yeah, that's right. It's good doing these things, but you have to kind of document it, and we've got the social media. We should use the social media and our websites and stuff, so that's important. We did have a photographer yesterday who he actually lost his camera.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I mean, we met up in a pub beforehand where we was waiting for other people to turn up, and then we kind of got to the area where we was going to do our banner drop, and was just take. You're going to take some stills, and he couldn't find it. He lost it. But
oh, man. Isn't it nerve-wracking leading up to these events? I don't know about you, but I just get really nervous.
It is a bit, because something could always go wrong. Like, I always think about, you know, you have those clips, those clipper tools to cut the tie wraps for the banners and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I thought, yeah, what if I drop that and it falls on the motorway, you know? And then,
yeah, yeah.
Little things like that, yeah.
Yeah. Now, that reminds me, yesterday, I don't know, we were way up in the air. I don't know if you see how high that bridge
is
on the south side. I have to be careful that I don't get vertigo up there.
Yeah, I'm not good with heights, but I noticed in that picture you kind of got a growing group there, and there was a young lady with a kind of white rabbit hoodie on.
That's what they call the undercover lover.
Is she a new addition to the group?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I can't, I don't know.
I'm not asking you to, you know, reveal her identity. But.
No, I could possibly, I was thinking about saying, they're from Grants Pass, Oregon. They're from down south. They probably came further than anyone else, a couple from Grants Pass. And I think maybe we're going to go talk with them, and I'd like to go south of here. I mainly work with people to the north because that's where the bigger cities are, but I may go south and do some work down in their area.
Okay. Well, let me just go back to something else, because after the banner drop on the Oregon Bridge, you also went up to Leaf to support Craig Cobb before things went wrong up there. And I noticed you took your banner up, and you managed to get that on TV, and I think you also said a few words on TV at the time. Could you just let us know how that thing went?
Well, yeah, the word there again, they were kind to me. They talked to me for quite a while, but they did manage to put me there, saying anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. They let me say that on television, and that's why I was there. So, you know, that was good for me.
I don't think these news channels realize what they're doing when they let you say that.
I think they're probably learning. But anyway, we've moved on, as you know, to diversity is a code word for white genocide. That's the hard line. That's the hard punch that we've got right now.
Yeah, and was that Buxton who
yes.
evolved it? Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the way that I, you know, when I'm out and, you know, if I advertise a site or something, I never really advertise for Bugs, because, you know, it's sort of an inside shop. I see it as kind of a think tank there, you know, not so much for public consumption, but for a particular segment of people that are concerned, with racial issues, where we try to focus exactly on white genocide, and we discuss, you know, the talking points. Bob, you know, gives us his opinion, and there's a lot of senior members on there that have been working with Bob for a long time, and so, you know, we discuss all these nuances of sound bites. And yeah, they are the ones that adapted it over and decided to focus it on diversity is a code word for white genocide. And then when White Man March wanted to get involved there, or to use that as a slogan for their campaign, it was decided to just substitute the equal sign for is a code word. And that was for, you know, practical purposes. Because when these banners get long, they're very hard to print, and they're very unruly. The wind can really be a factor when you get when you get that kind of square footage, it tends to act like a sail.
Yeah, and you've got to kind of make sure that the banner is properly stretched out. Because if you don't stretch it out properly so it's taut, then
yes.
When you connect the tie wraps, if you're doing it to a bridge, for example, then it doesn't look quite right.
That's exactly right. And that's an interesting thing that I've learned from experience. Like, for instance, yesterday, I really wanted that southern exposure because that's the high side. That's where that freeway drops off down to the river, and that's what really gives it the elevation. And we worked for a while, and those photos are from the south side, but we were working into a headwind from that side. The wind was pushing it back away from the barrier, from the wire mesh. So we ended up switching to the other side of the freeway, and then at that case, the wind did all the work. We were just able to prop the poles against the wire mesh, and the wind just held them there. It's just much, much easier with banners to have the wind pushing from behind, and that holds them flat in a case like that. Now, in your case, I can't recall, but I think you sort of drape them.
Yeah, so we kind of drape them over and then use those tie wraps, and you put your tie wraps through the little holes on the banner. And we kind of do it like that. But we've had the two times we've done it, we've kind of noticed that you have to make sure that you pull it nice and tight so it looks good. Otherwise, it can get kind of scrunched up.
Right.
But as you say, it's experience. And when people do these things, the first time, they're bound to be nervous. That's normal. If you're not a little bit nervous or a little bit paranoid, I think you're too complacent. Now, when I do things like this, I'm looking everywhere. I'm looking left, right, north, south, just to see exactly what's going on. I'm looking out for MUDs. I'm looking out for anti-white communists. I'm looking out for police and everything. So you do need to kind of keep your wits about you, but not to the extent where you get to the stage where you're so kind of careful that you won't do anything. I mean, you know, that's what this day yesterday was all about. It was actually people getting off their computers and doing something, you know?
Yeah, and showing people that it can be done, you know, setting an example. And this is why, I mean, some of us, you know, there's been some disappointment that in some areas there wasn't a large group turnouts, but I think it's maybe even more important for people to go out by themselves and just set the example that, yeah, even one person can be effective. Well, that was the best example of that was that. Well, no, that wasn't one person. That was just, that was Judy and I on Martin Luther King Day. But we got as much press locally, more press locally out of that than I have for anything else. And that was just the two of us.
Yeah, I was going to get onto that next, actually, Jimmy.
Well, excuse me for jumping. Let me say one other thing, though, that you mentioned about looking around. If, and here's the other thing I think I've learned, if you have enough guys, you know, if you can assign one guy to stand away from the group and observe the situation globally in the context, that can be very effective in spotting. In other words, you set a lookout. Your side, but doesn't appear to be with the group.
That makes sense, doesn't it? That's
if you have the manpower. Yeah, that came in handy for me just recently.
I think you need kind of a minimum of four or five. For the most part, so you've got a couple of people on the banner, someone to do a flag, someone to do filming and photos, someone to keep a lookout, that kind of thing.
Well, I think you're probably right, but it's going to depend on where you do it. There are places, I think, where one person can go and do it, and I don't think we want to raise the bar, you know, raise the threshold to four or five people. You know, that's a deal breaker for some of these people. They just don't have, some of us don't have that many contacts.
That's true. That's fair enough.
But if you go to a safe place, you know, to go to a, you know, go to an area of white flight where it's all white people, and those white people need to hear that message because they're traitors, you know? When they're voting with their feet and they're living in their gated communities and whatnot, they're living by a different set of standards than they're advocating for us. So I like to go to those areas and let them know that all's not well, that we know what they're doing and that they're not being very nice.
It's like all these people who have emigrated from California, and they'll speak to people in places like North Dakota or somewhere, and they'll say, you know, why did you move? And they'll say, well, it was a bit cramped, and or it was too hot, or, you know, we fancied coming here for a change. And it's quite obvious why they've moved, right? They're white flight. So, as you say, it's good to remind them of that.
Right.
So, going back to Oregon just for a minute, Camilla Mortensen of the Eugene Weekly wrote an article about your activism during Martin Luther King Day. Apparently, you scared the hell out of some innocent people. Could you tell us about that?
That you're being funny. I didn't scare anyone.
Well, that's what she wrote.
Oh, she actually wrote that?
Yeah, you terrorized.
Well, anyway, I think you said you had the photo of Judy and me up there on your website, so people can look at that and just see how scary we do look.
I'll put that on the show page. Sure.
I think we look pretty mild mannered old people that are, you know, just. I don't know.
Did you get any trouble that day? I mean, did the school people come over, or did the cops come, or anything like that?
Well, yeah, the cops did cruise by, and I'll include this as an anecdote. It was a white policeman, a young man, had his hat off. He had a very short haircut. I guess you could almost say he's just probably a skinhead, literally. And he was just beaming when he saw that we were out there. You know, we first saw the car and we thought, uh-oh, we're in trouble. But no, he was obviously ecstatic to see us there. And he just grinned and drove right on by.
That's good, isn't it?
But now as far as trouble, yeah, there was a nutball that kept going by back and forth and saying things, screaming things out at the window of his car. And then at the end, when it was time for us to go home, the people were cleared out from their white genocide rally that they'd been having in the high school auditorium. When we walked back to the car, he was there. I recognized him. And, he was like taking down the license number and then he started molesting us, you know, verbally while we were putting our things into the car and what have you. And then he goes, I'm getting ready to, I'm going to like plaster your name all over Craigslist or something. He thought he was going to give us like bad publicity on Craigslist, if I remember correctly. And it's just funny, but it does make you worry. You know, that was just a few blocks from our home. And, as you may have noticed, our house is all over the internet.
Is that your house on the internet?
Yes, of course it is.
Signs on it. Okay.
Yeah. Well. And then, I guess yesterday or the day or Friday, the, Rose City Anti-Racist, ARA, I guess they call them. So they were putting my address out on Twitter. But it doesn't seem to be working very well for them. And I don't think it will.
This is what they do, Jimmy. We've had this in England when, our Nationalist Party at the time was doing well. What the Marxists do, they'll be quiet when you're not doing much, and then when you start getting some success, be it either political success or a kind of activism success with this mantra thing, they'll try and counter it, like they did on that bridge with their crossing out hate sign. Well, obviously that didn't work, because we know who most of the hate is geared towards. It's geared towards white people. You know, you haven't got monkey hunting, you've got polar bear hunting, or, you know, the so-called knockout game. It's not much of a game, is it, when people die, but the media call it a game. Mm-hmm. It's just a game, you know, a few white people getting beaten, some of them dying, just a game. So what they then do when you're winning, either philosophically or with a good meme or politically, they get violent. Because history shows this again and again and again. I mean, we could have a quick look at Golden Dawn and see there, they tried all the anti-Nazi crap. Well, that didn't work. They tried to have a coalition against them. Well, that didn't work. So what did they do? Plan C, is to get violent, you know? And then when the Golden Dawn responded in kind, then they start getting arrested for it, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. What are you trying to do? Get me scared here, Paul?
No, not at all. But yeah. What I'm trying to say is that it shows you're winning when they have to get angry
like
that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, threatened violence or this kind of thing. I mean, most of them, they're cowards anyway. Yeah, there's a saying.
Yeah, but that coward can kill you too, you know, just like they did. They shot those guys. They walked up on them blindside and just shot them. But anyway, yeah. You know, the thing to remember.
That would have been hardcore Antifa, that would have been, wouldn't it? You don't see them very often. They're very kind of subterranean, you know.
Yeah.
Living in squats and stuff.
But anyway.
It only gets to that stage when you're near revolution, which Greece was, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's what people are going to have to expect, I'm afraid. You know, it's not, the world isn't all nicely happy, nice. You know, if you're going to want to fight genocide, it's going to get to that stage eventually.
Well, yeah, that's the point. It's not, it already is to that stage now. It's just that it's disguised. But once you understand it, then the choice is, well, do I risk someone shooting me or the question becomes not whether or not you want to die, but how you're going to die. You're going to die by just, you know, hanging around waiting to be genocided, or are you going to die with your boots on out there talking about it?
That's right.
And, yeah, that's the way it is. It's just a matter of, yeah.
Okay, so yesterday was the White Man March, organized by Carl Hunt over at Renegade. How did you get on? What did you get up to?
We went up there to the from here. Well, I don't know. Let's say it's a couple hours north of Portland. It's the capital of Washington. They have this very nice. I look at bridges and overpasses as I travel around, and this is the nicest bridge that I've seen on I-5 between San Francisco and the Canadian border. Very picturesque. So I've been wanting to do it for quite a long time, and finally, with the White Man March, served as an impetus, and I was able to, you know, interest some other people in the project. So we had 16 people gathered there. A lot of them came in the night before. We stayed at a hotel there, went out and got ourselves together and arranged these 9 banners on these 9 barrier panels. 8 feet by 8 foot barrier panels, arranged it to spell out the phrase "diversity is a code word for anti-white," or excuse me, "diversity is a code word for white genocide." That was just Judy helping me out. It's her activism kicking in, and Judy was down on the freeway to get the photo
of
it.
Good.
Did you
get many kind of support from motorists or passers-by and that kind of thing?
No, not as much as I would on a lower structure. I'm not sure. The wire mesh was a little bit smaller. Traffic was pretty heavy. I think people didn't have as much time to react.
Right.
As they have in other cases. So there was less honking than in other situations where I've been, you know, on a 20-foot overpass.
But that's it's quite good to 16 people. That's a hell of a number.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked that. We had the bagpipe. I had another bagpiper there, so we had 2 bagpipes and a drummer. And we did a little marching. We were 10 blocks from the Capitol grounds. We marched down to the Capitol. With the smaller banners, we put those banners away, and then we marched. We had a half a dozen diversity equal white genocide banners, 2 persons per banner.
Was this local to you? Because you was thinking at one stage of going down to Washington, right?
This was in Washington.
Oh, so you made the trip down?
Yeah, up, actually.
Okay.
North of here.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's good to do it in different areas, I think. I mean, how long did it take you to get to Washington from where you are?
About 4.5 hours.
Right.
I think it's 250 miles, roughly, from my house.
That's pretty good going.
Yeah.
Well, we did a little effort in Birmingham, England here. It was the Aston Expressway, which is very busy. It's kind of a mini motorway, and it leads onto the main motorway of the M6. The M6 is the main kind of spine of the country, motorway-wise. And the Aston Expressway leads to the M6 South, which goes to London, and the M6 North, which goes towards Liverpool, Manchester, and Scotland eventually. So that's why I chose that place. And as you say, when you said you was driving around and looking for places, I've drove around many times. I've drove through the Aston Expressway and thought, would that be a good bridge kind of thing? So what I did on a day, I set out early, and because there's probably about 8 bridges over the expressway, I drove around and did a recon kind of mission, and I found the perfect bridge to do our activism. The only problem was it is in an area of quite a lot of blacks, really. It was between Lozells and Aston. You might have heard of Aston Villa Football Club. They're quite famous. But it was a black area. But it was the kind of thing where, because of where the bridge is, it weren't really much of a purpose for anybody to walk across it. So we did have a few walk past, a few Somalis and stuff. But as long as you plan it in a way where you're not going to hang around too long, I would say we was there about 15, 20 minutes. And kind of do it, I suppose the word is professional, kind of be a bit, little bit professional about it. Don't stand around joking while you're doing it, because you want to keep your wits about you just in case. You want it to run smoothly and be successful. So for those kind of 15 to 20 minutes, we were sort of on our guard. But we put our anti-racist is a code word for anti-white banner over the expressway. And we had the Celtic Cross flag. And as I'm a National Front member, I had a National Front flag with the 4 flags of the United Kingdom on, which I borrowed off somebody. So, yeah, that went quite well. I think I might have sent the video. I mean, the proper video is being edited right now, because we've got an editor who's quite professional, does a really good job. But I did upload a kind of raw footage, and I know it's on the White Network, and it's, I think you posted it for me on the White Man March website,
right,
as well.
Right.
So people can have a look there. Did you hear anything about Australia? Because that law is does quite a lot in Australia, and but I haven't heard if she's how she got on there.
Well, she, Laura lives in the United States, but she has contacts a lot in Australia.
Oh, and she's Australian herself, right?
She may have more than one citizenship, but
she has
lived in Australia.
But she's definitely an Aussie, Jimmy, from her accent.
Yes. Yeah.
Ah, right. Maybe that explains it then, because I was thinking, I wanted to see something from Australia, but if she's not there, then we can't really blame her for that, can we?
No. She's been very, 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 very busy and involved in a lot of behind-the-scenes ways here in the United States, logistically, in this. I'm scrolling through photos. But to answer your question, I have seen things both from Australia and from New Zealand. I'm not finding them right this minute. But yes, I've seen something out from Australia. Isn't that true, Judy? Yeah. I think one of the darker colors, is it the one that says multiculturalism is a code word for white genocide?
What people should do if they want to see how it went is kind of go over to the White Man March website or have a look on White Rabbit Radio, that kind of thing.
Right. I think Horace at White Rabbit Radio, apparently that he's very involved right now with Twitter. So I would imagine there's a lot of Twitter, at least. Or I guess you can follow him. I think he's called Euro Rabbit on
Euro Rabbit, that's right, yeah.
On Twitter. And also Anti-Racist Hitler, I think, has an account, a Twitter account. But I don't know if it's covering White Man March.
Okay, well, I'll just remind listeners that we are taking calls. The easiest way to call in is just search for the White Network on Skype and click call on the white icon. If you're in North America, there is a call-in number which you can find at the White Network main website. All right then, Jimmy. There's some talk online about you possibly running for political office. Any comments on that?
I've been falling out of love with that idea. That got started by some anti-whites on that newspaper thread. There was a rumor got started that I was going to be running for mayor. There's no mayoral election until 2016.
Uh-huh.
And I have been talking with people that know about this sort of thing, American Freedom Party. And they've given me some advice about various races that might be viable for me to use to get the message out about diversity as a code word for white genocide.
Okay.
And that's of course why I would be doing this. I don't want to be really involved in politics. My job is propaganda. It's to get out the white genocide message. But if I can find a way to use the political process to do that, I'll be doing it.
That's the thing, because John Tyndall used to say when he did that speech in America in 2004, people wasn't taking so much notice of the party at the time until they got a few council seats, because it's a little bit of power. Now, I know David Duke's breakthrough was a long time ago now. Was it early 90s in Louisiana?
That's probably right.
And it's a bit of a disappointment for me personally, just speaking for me personally, that nothing else happened after that, because I would have surely thought that people who was involved with the campaign at the time, people who voted for him at the time, people who was excited about it, would have thought, well, here we've got a foot in the door, and it's going to grow from there. And I'm not saying that the politics is the only way to go, of course not, especially in America, but I can't see how it hurts to have a little bit of representation. And I've heard other people say this as well. So are the American Freedom Party, I mean, how active are they? Are they standing in any elections soon?
I think they are. But now, I just back up. I tried to make a mental note when you were talking about David Duke, and I think you said it was starting to pick up some momentum. And what I immediately thought of is this word "it." What is it? You see,
success.
Okay, but success in what? I mean, I think
success in getting hundreds of thousands or however many people. I would have presumed it would be hundreds of thousands to win a seat like that. The voted pro-white.
I think, you know? Pro-white is too general. I think that's the problem. I think we have these general characteristics. I think we need a very succinct message, and I think that's what we're doing, trying to get people to focus on white genocide. And to understand and be able to express in 20 words or less exactly what white genocide is. When
so you
have
could,
it.
Go on, sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say that you could run on a kind of anti-white ticket.
I could run on a white genocide ticket.
Sorry,
and
yeah,
you asked me.
Exposing the anti-white kind of agenda, you know?
You're calling it everything but what it is. It's white genocide.
Yeah, okay, sure. It is.
And everybody. You talk about American Freedom Party. Well, you know, they're interested in politics, but they can't make up their mind whether they're Christians or they're conservatives or they're just hate Jews. You know, it's a little bit unfocused. And
yeah, this is the problem, because you've got some good minds there. I mean, you've got Kevin McDonald, Virginia Abernathy, and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're all kind of
and Matt Heimlich.
But
is getting a lot of attention. But
what they've got to do, apart from having the message, which I hope you can kind of help them with, is kind of get little groups around the country. You know, they need something going on in Oregon, something going on in Texas, something going on in Washington. And how it works, to my mind, when an election comes, let's say it's in a low level election, like a state house, where you don't need huge amounts of money and you don't need ridiculous amounts of signatures to get on the ballot, then if 15 people or 30 people around the country all stand for the same election, then there's a good chance that at least one or two could break through, or at least get a vote which is like a shock, where the local papers report on it and then the alternative media pick up on it and it kind of snowballs from there. But unless you've got someone to kind of have a dynamic campaign, doing something a bit different, putting their foot forward, it's just going to be theory, isn't it? And I think we've got enough theory sites. Like, it's a good site. Kevin MacDonald writes, is it Occidental Observer? Very brainy site, very intelligent site, but it's not enough to keep adding these articles and essays and on. I mean, I do right. think to be taken seriously as a kind of quote-unquote movement, that you do need some political representation, personally, because there's still a lot of people out there that will say, oh, well, that was interesting. They did some banner drops. They did some signs, but they've never got anyone elected. I mean, they can't be that serious. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do. I'm not, you know, I think we have a slightly different viewpoint, because I'm not, you know, I'm not really interested in these candidates per se. I see my job and my effort being pushed forward to, like, sort of like clear a way to present a grassroots mandate for these people, or make it easy, because they're power seekers. And I don't say that in a bad way, but they're going to go, you know, where it's safe to go. And that's kind of like my job, is to get that message out there. The message is designed, you know, to make it safe for white people to talk about these things. And it's actually when white people feel more free to talk about these things, then politicians will see the advantage of appealing to that segment. So I'm more in a pull, in a marketing pull, than I am in a push, you know, for a candidate, because I don't care about these candidates. Most of them do more damage than they do good, as it is, because, you know.
What we have over here, Jimmy, is local elections. So this May, anybody in the country can stand as a candidate for the local council, and that is free. Do you have anything like that?
Well, you know, I'm really not an expert on that. I would say that it's ostensibly free, but what you have to have to be an independent, first of all, if you're going to be with an established political party, that's going to dilute your message.
Wouldn't you stand for the American Freedom Party?
Well, that's being discussed, but I'm not sure that I would, actually.
Okay. I'm not so kind of trying to be pushy.
Because there's getting to be a Christian connotation there, and I don't know if it's I'm beginning to discover it. And I really, that's just not something.
I agree with what the Andrew Anglin, the publisher of Daily Stormer, says. He says that pagans and Christians should unite.
So, I don't think so. I think Christians should disappear, because I think they're essentially, their politics and their spirituality or their conscious and their unconscious efforts are inimical to each other, and they're hamstrung.
Mm-hmm. I'm not pro-Christian myself, because with Christianity, I mean, every man is equal at the end of the day. I know Christians will say different, but you can have an African or you can have a European, and if they're both Christian, with the biblical teaching, they're equal, aren't they? And so I don't support it personally, but I wouldn't sort of, if someone was a good activist or good candidate and he was quite strongly pro-Christian, I mean, I could kind of not get too bothered about that, as long as he is a good activist or a good pro-white candidate or a good anti-white genocide candidate. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but I'm beyond that point. I don't think that can actually happen. I mean, if someone's a good Christian and a good race activist, then they're supporting wordism and racism at the same time. And I'm interested in working with people that are strictly interested in race.
What about these?
If they have a Christian backstory, that's okay, but they don't. You know, they want to bring it to the front, just like Matt Heimlich. does. You know, he's got to be dragging around a crucifix with him everywhere he goes. He's introducing that. Now, even your guy over there, what's his name? Nick Griffin did that recently. You know, he made a pretty good speech about white genocide, but then, you know, he mentions the final solution to the white Christian problem. You know, he's just introducing. He's hijacking the message. He's diluting the message.
I tried to warn Americans about Nick Griffin. I know he's good at giving a speech. But how pro-white is it to totally decimate the main chance that the British National Party, the main chance that white people had, and anybody can do a bit of research, or they could listen to more John Tyndall series, and I'll go into it in detail. So, you know, it doesn't really matter to me if he wants to go and do an odd speech in the European Union, which mentions white genocide. I mean, that's okay, but he's decimated the British National Party in Britain, and a lot of people are kind of burnt out now. That was their big chance. They give up all this money, all this time, put their head above the parapet. People lost their jobs. And then he goes and back steps, you see. He'll backpedal on all the important issues. So you're probably picking up on something there, where there's always a little kind of caveat that where he'll say, like you said, the Christian thing. He can't just say.
Yeah, and there's a couple of other places that he puts it in. Bob has an article up Whitaker online about this. Yeah, he calls it hijacking. And he talks about Nick Griffin, you know, and yeah, there he is, unholy coalition. He refers to it as Zionist supremacist, just all these kind of other buzzwords in there that are kind of moving away from the white genocide message and making it a white Christian genocide.
That's true. I mean, I know for a fact he's only come out with white genocide to bolster his support as people.
Of course.
On a daily
basis. I think
that's
what he did with Golden Dawn, too. Not to say that he couldn't be helpful, but we have to watch these people.
The thing is, he's supposed to be helping Golden Dawn with a legal thing, but his own legal track record is awful. He's done countless court cases which could have been finalised, but there wasn't, and he's dragged it out, and it's cost extra money, thousands of pounds, which the members have had to pay. You know, he's been bankrupt twice, not once, twice. And his answer to being bankrupt was, well, now I know how it is to be poor, I can give advice about it. I mean, it comes beyond the farce eventually, you know. But I kind of understand how Americans can see a little snippet and say, oh, wow, you know, that was good. Because there was a thing on the British National Party website about how important the White Man March was. And I saw that was picked up on the White Man March website, but there's nothing on their website today about it. I don't know if they did anything. But there you go. Anyway, what about getting that guy, Krager, from New Orleans to link up some time to do some activism? Do you think he'll be up for that?
Oh, I think that time passed. When he was single, he used to ask. He was investigating the Northwest Front up here. Okay. And that's how we got started talking to him about that. And he was interested in maybe moving to the Northwest, and that would have been really nice. I'd really like to have him up here. He's a really nice young man, but doesn't look like now that he's married, now that he's met that nice young woman, I think they're settled down, and there's not going to be much chance of me going down there to work because that's just unsafe. That's just like North Africa or something down there in Louisiana. Yeah, I can't.
The demographics are that bad?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't stand out down there.
Okay.
He's gonna have to
do a Google for Aston Birmingham and you'll see where we did it yesterday. all right, well hopefully Krager will get involved.
Well, that's for you young guys. Krager I'm sure can take care of himself. That'd be the nice thing about having him up here for security.
Yeah, sure.
You know, we had a little incident on Friday where there were four of us out, two men and two women. I was out in front of the girls playing the bagpipes, and but fortunately, this is what I was saying about leaving someone away from the group to keep an eye on things, and the guy came and charged at the girls with the banner. And
where was this? What event was this?
That was over at that South Puget Sound Community College.
What was the
where event? they had that diversity and equity official over there?
Does that mean diversity minus white people? That kind of thing.
Right.
Diversity, but white people not welcome. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were in the news about that, so we picketed that on Friday night, and then Friday at dusk, Friday at mid at evening rush hour. But yeah, so but fortunately, the other guy that was standing watch came in and tackled him before he was able to do any damage. He damaged the banner a little bit, but nothing happened to the girls. But yeah. It'd be nice to have Craigor around up here for that sort of thing, but I'm not going into Baton Rouge doing it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, another advantage of having someone with a camera, which, of course, it's legal to film people in public as long as you're not following them around, is if there's any of that kind of nonsense, they will think twice if they're on camera. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they want to say, well, don't film me, put your camera away. There's a kind of famous situation in Liverpool with the Liverpool BNP. And you had an anti-white, this was a few years back, you know, coming up to him saying, put your camera away, put your camera away. And they was just laughing at him. And eventually the BNP guys in Liverpool got arrested. But he didn't like that, him being filmed. But if you're in public and you are disrupting a legal activity, which is what you was doing on Friday, legal activity, you are allowed, it's your right by law to protest or raise political social issues. You're not in the wrong. They're in the wrong. They know that. And they're so used to having the media on their side, I think they've got a bit carried away. Well, now we have our own media. We can film what we want. And they don't like that, do they?
Not at all. And it's something that we have to learn to exploit. It's taken me a long time to understand that, and I still let my guard down. But yeah, if you can have a camera on hand and rolling or ready to roll, that's it's a good deal.
So we've only got a little bit. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. A couple of things I'd like people to look at. There's on the White Man March page. Someone's put together a little collage of activism from yesterday. Also, Kyle Hunt was on Tom Hartman, and I think he did pretty well on there. What would you say about that?
Yeah, he's a very talented guy. He could have stuck closer to white genocide, in my opinion, and in the opinion of Bugsers, but he did a good job, and we're definitely grateful to him for organizing this event so that we could get out there with that succinct message.
Yeah, one second, Jimmy. So, Jimmy, what have you got in line for the coming months and weeks? Have you got anything else coming up?
Well, like I mentioned, I might go down south, down towards Grants Pass, and see about doing something out there. Other than that, I'm ready to kick back, and I need to do a little maintenance on my house.
Well, fair enough. I'd say you've certainly done your share.
You too. And thanks a lot for your work in the media, because as we pointed out, the media is very important to us, and that's one of the things that you're doing. You're an activist on the street, and you're also a media person, and that's really a...
Yeah, I mean, it works. I mean, I got on Russia Today. It was only for a few seconds with my little mantra sign there, you know?
And, did you?
It does work. Yeah, you saw the photo, the Russia Today thing.
Send me a link again. I can't remember it.
Okay, we're running out of time. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cheers, Jimmy Ma.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Voice of Albion on the White Network.